Beloved, our second reading this morning comes from the first book of Kings, reading in the 19th chapter. Listen for God's word to the church. The angel of the Lord came a second time, touched him and said, "Get up and eat, otherwise the journey will be too much for you." He got up and ate and drank. Then he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. At that place he came to a cave and spent the night there. Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He answered, "I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away." He said, "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Now there was a great wind, so strong it was splitting mountains and breaking rocks in pieces before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Then there came a voice to him that said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He answered, "I have been zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. The Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away." Then the Lord said to him, "Go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. When you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael as king over Aram. You shall also anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, as king over Israel, and you shall anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat of Abel-Meholah, as prophet in your place." The word of the Lord. The announcement of the birth of a baby has been done in an interesting variety of ways. One can receive a card in the mail, hopefully with a lovely picture of the wee baby, or one might get a group text or email sharing the good news. A few years ago, before cell phone and long-distance calling plans were widely available, there was a commercial on television regarding a birth announcement. In the advertisement, the new father makes a collect call to his parents. The operator informs the recipients that they have a collect call and asks if they'll accept the charges. An inquiry as to whom it is that is calling is made, so the operator asks the caller to state his name. So the young dad says, "It's Jim. Jim, we are the baby, it's a boy." His father declines the call and they both hang up. In the next scene, the new grandparents are celebrating, woohoo, because it was a call from their son, Jim, telling them that he and his wife had had a baby and it's a boy. Apart from finding out the child's gender, the next question that friends and family might ask is what name the new parents are going to give their child. Decisions must be made on how or after whom the baby is named. Are there family traditions that one must consider in the process, such as having the child continue a particular name through a succession of generations? For instance, will the child be named William Simpson III or William Simpson Jr.? Is there a feminine form of the name that might be given to a girl, such as Wilhelmina Simpson? Parents might find themselves fielding questions about the meaning of the name they have selected for the new addition to their family. In several cultures around the world, people select names for their babies based on the meaning. A name like Felicity means happiness. Brian means noble. Pamela means all honey or sweetness. Sometimes the circumstances of a child's birth influence the name that is given to the baby. In the Xhosa tribe in South Africa, after a long period of waiting and hoping to conceive a child, a baby girl might be given the name Lindiwe, which means waiting for you. Do you know the meaning of your name? And if so, does your life bear witness to the attributes or benedictions that are conveyed in it? Perhaps you know why you were given a particular name, and maybe why your middle name is what it is. Naming children in several African societies is often accompanied by a huge celebration. There's often a lot of drumming, along with elaborate dances performed and the sounds of ululating by guests. It sounds something like this. Sometimes there are accounts of the reason why the child is being given a particular name. One typically turns to the person who has the best talent for communicating history, the mores and emotions that are associated with that appellation. The art of storytelling is a cross-cultural phenomenon. Almost everyone knows who the best storytellers are in their family of origin. Perhaps it's the job of a neighbor or a Sunday school teacher who can hold the attention of every man, woman, and child as she or he begins to speak at the town fair. Various cultures have characteristics in their stories that appear repeatedly to create comedy, to teach a lesson, or embody characteristics that are to either be championed or avoided. Thanks to Warner Brothers, I can think of a couple of paired characters who tell stories in a very amusing way. There's Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. And then there's my favorite, who gets under the skin of Elmer Fudd. Anyone? Bugs Bunny, yes. In folklore, one can find clues about what each character might convey or what each place might represent. It is with this notion in mind that I read the text of 1 Kings 19 to offer a perspective that employs the meaning of the names of the people and the places that are mentioned in the reading. We encounter Elijah, who, while he is a prophet who has enjoyed much acclaim and respect, was now fleeing for his life. The prophet wanted to escape the sound of soldiers marching around in search of this man whom God had sent to turn people away from sin and the worship of the Baals. If the prophets found him, Elijah would most certainly be arrested and taken before Queen Jezebel, who would have him killed. The prophet needed to find a desolate refuge where nobody would be able to find him. God's envoy travels to Mount Horeb and finds a cave in the rocks where he can bide his time until it is safe to leave the cleft in the rock. All manner of storms take place, wind and rain, fire and earthquakes, and yet it is only in the calm quietness after the storms have subsided that Elijah is able to hear God's gentle whisper speaking clearly to him. It is after hearing from God that the prophet is able to complete his ministry when he returns to his hometown of Abel-Mehola. The rich meaning that opens up to us when we examine the text not only alters the trajectory of the prophet Elijah's life, but also lends meaning to the way in which our own lives unfold. Elijah's name means, "My God is Yahweh." The acknowledgement that the Lord is God was an affirmation that Elijah's parents made when they named him. God works his purpose out through Elijah by empowering the prophet to perform miracles, such as raising a dead boy to life. Elijah is also able to call down fire from heaven. The prophets of false gods like the Baals failed to deliver such evidence that would convince people that worshiping the Canaanite fertility gods was worth their time. The revelation that the Canaanites worshipped false deities so incensed the queen that she wanted to end Elijah's life. So the prophet left town and ran for the hills. His escape route led him straight to Mount Horeb. Elijah found a cave in the Rocky Mountain and entered it, hoping to remain there until the danger had passed. An interesting note about the mountain is that its name, Horeb, comes from the same three letters that form the Hebrew verb hareb, which means to dry up, lay to waste, or desolation. So Elijah finds himself in an arid, dry place. There's also a connotation of heat that contributes to the dryness. So it's a desert. Seeking refuge in the cave of Mount Horeb speaks to the doubt that has begun to play in this erstwhile successful prophet's mind. He was beginning to believe the rumors about the strength of the queen's army. Self-doubt and fear become his constant companions, and Elijah runs for it. He's out of there, pew, gone. From our vantage point, and having seen all the things that he has done, the great acts of power, we might think, why are you running scared? You've got the power of the God behind you. And yet, Elijah is human. In this desolate place, in this spiritual desert, God comes near and whispers gently to the prophet. Another consideration that the majority of biblical scholars say is that Mount Horeb and Mount Sinai are the same place. It is here that Moses encounters God, so we should not be surprised that God shows up to speak with his ambassador on this same mountain. This time, however, God's voice is a quiet whisper. The instruction that God gave to Elijah was that the prophet should return to Damascus to anoint Hazael, whose name means God has seen, as king over Aram. The prophet is also to anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, as king over Israel. Finally, he was instructed to go home to Abel-Mehola and anoint Elisha to take on the mantle of prophet. Beloved, you and I have listened to this story. And now I will be silent for a moment so that you can hear the whispered invitation from God to you. Did you hear it? The Lord is calling you by name. He's calling me by name. God did not use your first or your middle name, and neither did God call you Elijah. The Lord has opted to call us by our third name. Listen for it. not that car. Christian. That name means one who follows Christ. God has seen the successes that we have both individually and as a congregation. God sees how we have baptized and nurtured children through Sunday school. God has seen the wonderful way in which this church shares biblical stories through the brilliant oratorio performances in this church. God has also seen the times when we struggle with hardships and disappointment. And yet God says that it is time for us to come out of our spiritual caves and return to our hometown, to our Abel Meholah. The meaning of Elijah's hometown means meadow of dancing. So what if God is not asking us to return to the physical places of our birth, but rather calling us to return to Wayne Presbyterian Church, our spiritual home? What if this is our Abel Meholah? Then how and where are you and I going to be dancing in the halls, the connector, and the meeting rooms of this church? God is inviting us to dance by reconsidering our engagement in the ministries of our home church. Is there something that you used to do but decided to take a break from? Is this the time that you are being called to use your skills as a math tutor or English tutor in Southwest Philadelphia? When you hear God's whisper, do you hear God encouraging you to nominate yourself to serve Christ as a deacon or elder, as an usher, as a lector, as someone who will share our holy meal by serving communion? The good thing about that is that God gives us time to prayerfully consider that commitment. God is asking us to dance by reconnecting with people from whom we are estranged, in the second vibration of this still small voice that belongs to the Lord. Sometimes our egos get in the way of working peacefully with our sisters and brothers in serving Jesus, but the Lord calls us to make amends and to strive to work together for the kingdom. We should really consider doing that, since we are going to spend an eternity with one another. We need to repair our relationships now, so that we're not dying of embarrassment forever. Finally, our dancing means that we can revitalize our commitment to God and enhance our life's journey through the speaker series, through adult Christian education classes and Bible studies that will be offered here at Wayne. So, dear Christians, come and dance in our Abel Meholah, Wayne Presbyterian Church. The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of the Lord endures forever. Amen.